From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. On today's program, we have two old-time radio shows featuring Jack Webb, but neither of them will be an episode of Dragnet, of course his best-known radio and television series. First up, we have an episode of Jeff Regan, Investigator. Jack Webb portrayed this hard-boiled detective on CBS in 1948. He was replaced in 1949 by Frank Graham. This broadcast, program number 23 in the series, was the second-to-last episode to feature Webb in the lead role. From December 11th of 1948, here is The Gambler and His Ladies.
My name's Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, the Lion's Eye, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Gambler and His Lady.
You find it in Hollywood, on Taft Avenue. Four-story apartment building, the color of a rainy afternoon. They call it the Havenwood. It sags in the middle like a tired Frankfurter. That's where I live. Apartment 3K. Two rooms with a pull-down bed and a pair of windows that stick when it's hot. Oh, the view isn't much. Six strands of telephone wire and the head of a shaved-off palm tree. Beyond is the city, L.A., spread out on the map like a raw egg with a broken yolk. Well, the town's all right, I guess, if you can afford the sedatives. The Lion likes it. He set himself up as a receiving clerk for trouble, and I worked for him. It was about 11:15 Tuesday night when my phone began making itself felt. It turned out to be the Lion breathing hard. It figured he was running his fingers over a greenback.
Regan, want to hear the sound of a brand new $50 bill?
Send me a record.
What's the matter? You sound like you're flat on your back.
How do you sleep?
Who's sleeping? I'm working, and that's what you're going to be doing.
Try me tomorrow.
Throw on some clothes. You're going down to Venice Boulevard to see a lady. She's got daughter trouble.
Well, marry her off.
She didn't pay us $50 for that. The problem goes deeper.
How much?
She'll tell you.
I want it from you.
I don't know it all for sure.
Don't you ever check into things?
I do the general work. You get the details.
Yeah, you drag a wet rag over the 50, and if the ink stays on, we got a client.
That's insulting.
How would you know?
Regan, you don't want to keep a lady waiting. Now get a move on.
Give me the name.
This is Eleanor Bascom, Pierpont Hotel.
Yeah?
And phone me after you talk to her.
What for?
I want to be sure it's legit.
Do you care?
Better make that call to me tomorrow after 10. I'm sort of going to be tied up till then.
Doing what?
Sleeping.
Well, I put on some clothes, picked up my car, and moved out to Venice Boulevard. The good humor men were all gone, and I had the street to myself. 20 minutes later, I came to a stop beside a garbage can near San Pedro. Behind it stood the Pierpont Hotel, a two-deck pile of wood left over from the sinking of the Spanish Armada. There was a black and dirty white sign outside, said rooms, 50 cents, weekly and monthly rates. The names Eleanor and Georgia Bascom showed in the mailbox and gave a room 210. I climbed a flight of stairs and walked down a hall that looked like a passageway in a pyramid. It was dark, and it took my cigarette lighter to turn up the numbers. 210 finally showed, and I rapped on the door. A bush of black and gray hair pulled it open. It was wearing a red kimono and an impatient look, like a tax collector in January. She was pushing 50 and looked tired.
Yes?
I'm Regan, international detective.
Oh, yes, the Lion's Eye. I've been waiting for you. Come in. I'm Mrs. Bascom.
Eleanor or Georgia?
Georgia's my daughter. I want to apologize for getting you out here this time of night, Mr. Regan, but it's urgent.
The Lion said that the girl's the problem, huh?
Yes.
How old is she?
22.
Who's the man?
How'd you know there was a man?
Well, what other kind of trouble would she go after?
She's a good girl, Mr. Regan. She always has been.
Until now, huh?
That's what I want to know.
Well, she's old enough to call her plays?
That's not the advice I'm paying for.
Where'd you get the 50?
It took a lot of saving.
All right, give me his name.
Louis Desmond.
Gambler, card sharp, bookie, all-around con man.
He's got a card room out toward Gardena someplace, the Five Aces Club.
What does your daughter see in him?
Oh, it's this place, the way we have to live. She's tired of having nothing. I've tried, but she's looking for a change.
And taking a wrong turn.
I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, other girls have it real tough. They go to work.
Well, we had a little trouble in the family once. It shows up if someone starts looking.
When can I talk to Georgia?
Well, you'll have to work that out yourself, Mr. Regan.
What does that mean?
She put some clothes in a suitcase and left earlier this evening. That's why I had to call you so suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Where'd she go?
Louis is a real bum, Mr. Regan.
You talk like you know him.
We've met. I want to know just what's going on. If Louis's forcing her into anything crooked.
She force easy?
A fur coat makes a young girl do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a picture of her. You may need it. Mm-hmm. Not very good, but only one I've got.
I'll make it work.
That's about all, Mr. Regan. Get in touch with me as soon as you get something.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Regan.
Yeah.
As you can tell, I'm the kind of person who sometimes gets hysterical over things, but I'm also the kind who demands results.
You sound like a radio commercial. It was after midnight when I followed the fog out Vermont toward Gardena. The yellow lights were pressing, but they were doing about as much good as a pint of bourbon at a Shriners convention. I wound around the flatland for a while before the Five Aces Club turned up by a bend in the road. It looked like a blue wart with a neon sign. There was a front door and a back one and a couple of pairs of shoulders standing at each. A little guy in a pinstripe gray was figuring the size of the wallets going in. Louis Desmond's office showed at the top of the stairway and I moved for it. But a muscle looking down on 6 feet was playing front man. He put a knotted hand on my arm and when he spoke it sounded like a gear factory doing double time.
Slow down, Pilgrim. The room you're looking for is the other way.
Yeah, well, this one says office.
That's the trouble with you guys who read. Can't take hints.
Spell it out.
Beat it.
Not until I see Louis Desmond.
What's your business?
I'll tell it to him.
You owe him some dough?
No, I don't.
Then he ain't interested.
He will be.
Listen, Junior,
come on, get him off of me, punk.
Hey. What's all the noise, Patsy?
Sightseer without a ticket.
My name's Regan.
Cup?
Maybe.
You want me to bounce him down the stairs, boss?
Maybe. What do you want?
Talk.
That's always a waste of time.
Not if it's about Georgia Bascom.
Come on in. Never saw you around here before, Regan.
No, I can't afford it.
Oh, don't say that. Some people go out of here with more than they come in with.
Yeah, you.
Guess you're right at that. Cigar?
No, thanks.
Well, what about Georgia, Regan?
You tell me.
That doesn't add. You came to see me.
She's got a worried mother.
They're all like that.
Now, this one figures you're doing a little forcing.
Oh.
You'd know more about that.
Give me a clue.
Blackmail, maybe?
You're a kick. Arthur Godfrey'd love to get a hold of you.
I come too high.
Let me give you some good advice. Go home and pull a blanket over your head and say it's all a bad dream.
You know, you talk a lot, mister, but you don't say much. What's the hold on Georgia?
All right, wise guy. Honey. Come over here, baby. Regan, you know this girl?
I've seen a picture.
Georgia, this is a peeper named Regan. He come to rescue you.
But what for, Mr. Regan?
$50.
My mother gave you that to come and take me back?
Something like that.
But I can't go.
Why not?
Well...
Go ahead, show him, baby.
Look, Regan, 3 carats.
With a wedding band to match.
On what dice table did you pick those up?
Stop the noise, Regan. Congratulate the lady.
Not on a bad mistake.
Listen, Shamus.
Oh, never mind him, Louis. He doesn't matter.
When did the furs come?
Louis said soon. Tell Mama we're married and not to worry. We're going away for a few days.
Ensenada for some gambling and fishing.
You won't enjoy it.
Sure I will. You'll be in L.A.
The alley behind the Five Aces Club hadn't been dusted in a week. My brown flannel suit fixed that. Well, I picked myself up and made it for the car. Moving north on Vermont, I tried to add a couple of things. There was a funny smell in Louis's office when I first walked in, like rope on fire. Somebody'd been there before me who smoked cubebs. Desmond worked on cigars. Georgia held a king-size Pall-Mall. Well, whoever it was still played it coy. About 1 o'clock, I started raising a small campaign with a lion's door knocker. His dream must have been a real good one because it took him 10 minutes to get to the door. He was wearing a nightgown, and he looked like a poor imitation of the Fisk tire ad. All that was missing was the candle.
Regan, I told you not to bother me until after 10 a.m.
It's no bother.
Get out of here, let a man sleep.
Your dreams will be bad.
What do you mean?
You just lost a client.
What's the matter, the money phony?
Georgia Bascom married Desmond. There's nothing I can do about it.
Well, think of something. Say you married her first.
You're out of your mind.
So it's a bad idea. Get a good one.
Yeah, I already have.
What is it?
You give Mrs. Bascom her case back.
Well, you can't do that.
Try me.
Think a minute, Regan. She's come to us for help. A lonely woman with no place to turn. Entrusts her trouble to International.
You got that 50 spent?
It's not the money. It's the moral obligation.
Oh, stop it, will you? You don't give blood anymore since you found out somebody'd pay for it.
You're getting out of line.
You're the only guy in town who can turn a shaving cut into a bankroll.
That's enough. Well, let's do it this way. You go over to Mrs. Bascom and give her the lowdown. Let her decide if she wants you to carry on or not.
You sure go to a lot of trouble for a 50.
I need a lot of new stuff around the place.
Well, it's close to Christmas. Write to Santa Claus. I left the Lion looking for a fountain pen, and I drove out to Venice Boulevard in the Pierpont Hotel. The place still looked the same. A black Nash was parked up the block, a motor going. A couple of cats were doing a duet on a garbage can. I climbed the stairs to the second floor, and I started down the hall for 210, walking real easy to keep the boards from creaking, but somebody else didn't care about the noise. There was a gun with a silencer working in Mrs. Bascom's room. I pushed the door in, but by then all I could hear was silence. The light showed an open window with a fire escape, and the wind was blowing the curtains. Mrs. Bascom lay face down on the bed, real still, and the holes in her blanket were turning wet. The Lion really lost a client that time. Well, it didn't take Sanducci and the boys long to get there. The fingerprint man and the photographers went to work in the room. Sanducci picked me. He had a grouch on like a fat lady in an upper berth.
What's the matter, Regan? You get lost?
What do you mean?
You're pretty far from home.
Well, I get around.
Who is she?
Name's Eleanor Bascom.
I know that. What's she do? Where she come from?
I don't know.
What were you doing out here?
She called in the Lion. Her daughter ran off with Louis Desmond.
Oh, he in it? How far?
Ask him.
Mrs. Bascom wants you to bring her daughter back?
She wanted to know if the girl was moving into a racket.
Was she?
I haven't found out.
I should have known better than to ask a detective. Why didn't she call us?
She was behind on her taxes.
What do you do, Private? Sit up nights figuring ways to make my job harder.
You through with me?
No. Who killed her, Regan?
I don't know.
Bad choice of words.
Go check a black Nash parked up the street.
Got a license number?
No, I haven't.
Thanks a lot.
Look, I'm no medium. I didn't know she was marked.
Any other big ideas?
A few.
Well, keep them to yourself. They're all wrong. Now get out of here.
Yeah. Say, Sanducci.
Yeah?
The Lion can handle another client now.
So what?
Want to sign up? Slept. Coffee and warmed over biscuits at the drugstore took care of breakfast the next morning. Then I checked the phone book. Louis Desmond's home address turned up on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, and so I drove out there. Was on a corner. A two-story colonial place with white pillars and green shutters. The doorbell sounded like a second chorus at the Hollywood Bowl. A Japanese maid let me in, and I waited in the anteroom. That's when I caught that peculiar smell again. Somebody had just been there who smoked those cubeb cigarettes. Well, a couple of minutes later, a tall blonde fighting 30 stepped up to me. She smelled like she just crawled out of a bottle of Platine. It was a bright morning, but she had the kind of look that had you wishing for an eclipse.
Well, what do you want?
Louis Desmond.
Census taker?
No.
What's he done?
I don't know yet. Where is he?
I don't know where he is. He didn't come home last night.
Lots of work at the office?
Card room out in Gardena.
Lots of work out there?
He didn't say. He doesn't tell me everything.
Should he?
Depends on what you think of your marriage vows.
Who are you?
His wife. Want a drink, mister?
Sure.
What'll it be?
Yours?
Bourbon. You pour. I don't know when to stop.
All right. Here you go.
Hmm? To marriage. It's a mess. Hmm.
Cigarette?
Never touch them. Interferes with my drinking.
Who smokes the cubebs?
Is that what that stuff is?
Yeah.
That little guy walked in here looking for Louie and smelled up the place.
Hiya, Stella.
Oh, hello, Patsy. Just in time for a drink.
Company?
Yeah. What's your name, fella?
He knows.
You learn hard, don't you, Regan?
What's going on?
He's an eye.
So what?
So he gets a bounce.
He's my friend.
Beat it, Seamus, or I'll split you.
Stay right where you are. This is my house, and I'll entertain who I want.
With the boss's liquor?
I've got some rights.
Well, figure out what they are and try them on the boss.
I don't like you, Patsy.
Beat it, Peeper.
Get your paws off of me. Come on, get them off.
Stop it, Patsy. You... Stop it, I said.
Well, you hit him pretty hard, lady.
No, I didn't. His head's soft.
Well, I left her picking up pieces of glass, and I drove back toward Hollywood. I was moving east on Sunset, trying to make some sense out of Desmond's domestic life, when I spotted that black sedan again. It was doing a real bad tag job on me. I pushed the pedal closer to the floor, but the sedan had better gas. It caught me going around a bend past Beverly Glen and started pushing me. Oh, it was a great place for a boulevard stop, but none showed. All it did was a reflection in my rearview mirror of the driver in the black sedan. It was feminine, and the voice spelled out Georgia Bascom. That's when she moved in for a closer look.
You are listening to the story of the gambler and his ladies. Tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Now, back to the story of the gambler and his ladies and Jeff Regan, investigator.
Well, things were moving as fast as the last reel in a Western movie. The Lion sent me out to see a lady who was having daughter trouble. Georgia Bascom had done a tie-in with a gambler named Louis Desmond. Only it looked real permanent. She was wearing his wedding ring, and the mother ended up carrying a couple of bullets and homicide moved in. That's when I met a blonde at Desmond's house who said she was Louie's wife. Well, I was working on the mess when a black sedan with Georgia at the wheel ran me off the road and the slugs began to fly. I peeled myself off the side of the hill and I got in touch with the police. Sanducci took over and invited me to headquarters for some more talk. He put me in a little room with pale green walls and sat behind a big desk chewing a dead cigar. Was taking me all in like a Hoover vacuum cleaner on a dirty rug.
Well, how do you feel, Regan?
All right.
You shouldn't.
Why not?
Looks to me like from here on in you're a marked man.
I'll get along.
It'll be real interesting to see how.
All right, now look, have you got something to say?
Maybe.
Well, let's hear it.
Relax, Regan. You're not going any place.
You can't hold me. I was the one who got shot at.
Well, that's enough. I'll work out a way to hold you for creating a disturbance.
It won't work.
Listen, you. The bullets we pulled out of your upholstery matched the ones in Mrs. Bascom.
So what?
So we figure she was knocked off because she knew something somebody didn't want said. We also figure that applies to you.
Yeah, well, that gets you nothing.
All right, Regan. Play it your way this time. You'll come running back when the heaters close in.
Don't make book on it.
Well, if you got to get yourself knocked off, don't mess up our city streets.
Yeah, I'll be real careful.
Oh, and wear a dark suit that save our morticians a little trouble.
That all?
Yeah, go on, beat it, sure. Oh, Regan.
Yeah.
E baffi di tuo padre.
What's that mean?
Your father's mustache.
Well, it was late afternoon by the time I walked out of headquarters. The sun was still working, but it was cold. The cab driver, with a lot of conversation, drove me to my place over on Taft. When I opened my front door, I smelled it again, those cubebs. A small face was sitting on my sofa sucking on him. It belonged to a guy who had to stand on a box to see over a fox terrier. When I shut the door behind me, he ground the cigarette into an ashtray and turned on a nervous look like a pig in a football factory.
Your landlady let me in, Mr. Regan. I hope you don't mind. I have to talk to you.
We met before.
We did? I don't remember.
Just me and your cigarettes.
Huh? Oh, You mind if I smoke?
You just finished one.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes, so I did. May I have a drink then? Just a small one.
All right.
Thank you. I generally don't drink, but tonight I... Thank you. Now, I barely know where to begin.
Well, you better figure it out. You haven't got much time.
Yes, yeah. Well...
Start with a name.
Is that necessary?
Yeah, it is.
Loper, Max Loper. I'm a businessman.
What kind?
What kind? Furrier. Yeah, I'm a furrier, Mr. Regan. All sorts of furs. Ermines, nice. Generally, I prefer sable, but it depends on the woman, you know?
What does Georgia get?
I beg pardon?
Let it go.
Yeah. I'm not the man I used to be, Mr. Regan. My fortunes have changed. Yeah, it changed. I think I better have that cigarette.
Save it for later and start making sense.
Well, I need help.
Why come to me?
Well, Mrs. Bascom thought enough of you to ask you to help her. You see, I know Mrs. Bascom. That is, I knew Mrs. Bascom. Her death was so sudden.
It was forced.
Yeah, so the papers say. But, Mr. Regan, I want you to know I didn't do it.
Who said you did?
Well, nobody yet. But I didn't do it.
Look, why tell me?
There's nobody else I can tell.
Try the police.
No, that's what I can't do. I want you to prove to them that I wouldn't do a thing like that.
Loper, what's your tie-in with Desmond?
My... Desmond? Why? There is no tie-in.
You were at his card room. I smelled your cigarettes there. You got nothing, I guess, and you went to his house.
Mr. Regan, that's got nothing to do with it.
I think different.
But you're wrong, all wrong.
Convince me.
I didn't do the murder. That's what I want you to tell the police.
Who did?
I don't know.
Well, now I think you do. Come on, who killed George's mother?
It was her stepmother who was killed.
Give me some more.
Oh, you got me all confused. I guess coming to you for help was a bad idea.
Something was.
I'll find somebody else who doesn't ask so many questions. I better go.
No, not yet, little man. You got too many answers.
Take your hands off me. Now, Mr. Regan, I never used one of these, but the theory is simple. Just pull the trigger.
If you can find it.
Don't urge me. Open the door. Go on.
Sure.
Now step away. See you later, Mr. Regan.
Hey, Loper.
He made it to the staircase, and then the noise came. A couple of bullets flew up the spiral and caught him in the chest. He stopped in midair for a second like a yo-yo on a string, and then he toppled over and rolled down. By the time I got to him, he was all used up. Well, a call into homicide brought some of the boys out, and they took care of him. A fat guy with a head like a plunger took him pictures for a paper, and a girl with a leaky fountain pen got the story. Took about an hour and a half to clear my place. But the minute the crowd moved out, the lion moved in. He had a sheet of paper in one hand, and his face was lit up like an old maid at a cocktail party.
This concerns Louis Desmond and Georgia Bascom. You interested?
Yeah.
Desmond's got a wife, and her name's not Georgia.
No, it's Stella, and she's a ripe candidate for a drunk tank.
What else do you know about her?
She's jealous.
Well, there's no record any place of a divorce or of a marriage between Georgia and Desmond. That whole setup's a phony.
Tell me why.
Georgia's father, name of Peter Bascom, was a furrier. And he was once in on a fur job with the same Louis Desmond.
Go on.
The old Bascom ended up with a bullet in him and Louis with a pile of dough.
How did it work?
I can't find out everything. You gotta do something.
You know a Max Loper?
Never heard of him.
You got an address on this Georgia?
The Larina Hotel, room 406, on Catalina, off Wilshire.
All right.
The way I figured, an insurance company might be real interested to get hold of her.
No, the gas chamber's got priority.
We figured the swindle first. Collect the fat bonus, then let the city handle her any way it wants. Call me when you get it all sewed up.
What are you going to be doing?
Resting at home. I'm all worn out.
Yeah, well, that figures. You've been doing a little thinking. The Lorena Hotel, six stories of plush carpet and gold paint. It was night when I got there and the neon was on. The buzzer brought the door open and Georgia Bascom stood there carrying an overcoat. She had her purse under her arm and it figured she was leaving. When she saw me, she turned on a surprised look.
Oh, Mr. Regan.
Moving out?
Just a little errand.
It'll keep. Shut the door.
Now, see here.
Shut up.
Well, that's a lot of nerve.
Don't let it bother you. There are bigger things.
Like what?
A fur job you and Louis are working on.
What are you talking about?
And a little murder? Throw your purse on the sofa.
I will not.
Come on, lady, it's getting heavy. Now open the closet door. Come on.
There. I hope you're satisfied.
I'm not much on fashions. Read them to me.
Three ermine, three sable.
$10,000 apiece?
More.
Max loafers?
Yeah.
Well, you can't wear them all. You got a friend?
I don't need one.
All right, sis, what is it?
Nothing.
That's your version.
You could be wrong.
When'd you marry Desmond?
Last week.
Bad answer. He's got a wife named Stella. Bigamy will get him in trouble.
Well, that's his problem.
No, it's yours, too, if the courts can prove you knew.
All right, I didn't marry him.
Then why the wedding ring?
Hey, you ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, I do.
Why don't you get out of here?
Louis's not new on fur jobs. He knows how much work it is to palm him off.
You're talking to yourself.
Loper never got to outlive a double cross.
What are you going to do with that?
Nothing. Homicide will work it out.
I didn't kill anybody.
You'll work up a sweat proving it.
Louis did it, honest. He killed my stepmother because she knew how the job worked. He gave it to Loper, too. He would...
Hiya, friends.
It must be raining. The worms are coming to the top.
Hello, Louis. Regan's got it figured. I was just stalling him till you got here.
Sure, Georgia. I know.
Honest, Louis, honest. I didn't mean to say you did the knockoffs.
We'll talk about it later.
You better finish it now. You're not going to be around.
We'll see.
They got a spot all staked out for you up north.
Isn't that interesting? Regan, I got a set of instructions for you. I want you to be real nice and follow them.
What's in it for me?
You killed me, Seamus. I'm holding all the cards. You want to rake in the pot.
I better get going, Louie. We shouldn't be seen together right now.
Slow down, baby. I got something for you, too.
But, Louie, I...
Big mouth.
Don't
you... Big mouth.
Look, you didn't have to hit her more than once.
She got off easy. Everybody's got 32 teeth.
Desmond moved us out of the apartment and down the hall. Georgia was beginning to sob, but Desmond wasn't impressed. He held the gun under his coat and walked behind us careful, like an elephant on a crate of eggs. The button brought the elevator, and the three of us went in, and then it started down. When the door swung open on the first floor, a whiff of bourbon came floating in, packing a 32. Louis turned white.
Stella! Stella!
Told him if he kept messing around, he was going to have trouble at home.
You want to give me the gun?
No. What's your name, girlie?
Georgia.
Were you in love with Louis?
I don't know.
Well, go find out. You want it now, Regan? It's empty.
You know, lady, you fixed nothing.
What do you mean?
Where you're going, you'll all be together again. It was all over fast, like a dollar dinner. The coroner's office sent out some boys for Georgia and Louie, and Sanducci picked up Stella. Desmond had himself a pretty good thing. Do a tie-in with a furrier and move the furs across the border with nobody making a fuss. Oh, it was slow work, but $10,000 a week's pretty good pay, and it was real safe. Loper wasn't going to say the furs were even stolen until they were turned into money. Of course, he never got to say it at all. Everything would have been all right if Stella didn't see green every time Louis saw blonde. Well, the insurance company thanked us for what we did to expose the fraud. The lion was unhappy. He said they should have shown their gratitude with something more lasting. They gave it to him, a 1949 pocket calendar.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, Investigator. Written by Larry Roman, produced by Sterling Tracy. Included in tonight's cast were Mary Lansing, Marvin Miller, Pat McGeehan, Lorette Philbrandt, Jack Petruzzi, Yvonne Patey, and Sidney Miller. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles. Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Jeff Regan, Investigator. The Gambler and His Ladies, from December 11th, 1948. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website for much more info about the show, as well as streaming audio, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is program number 1804. For our final offering this hour, we turn to the series Escape, and program featuring Jack Webb in the lead role. This broadcast is from July 28th of 1950, also on CBS. It's their adaptation of a Roald Dahl story, a very moving story about racial prejudice, a subject which in 1950 was still considered by most of society to be quite taboo. It's simply titled Poison.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield gasolines with Xylene, Rich Lube, all-weather motor oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps.
Tonight, we escape to India and the story of a man trapped in his bed by a crate, the most deadly, poisonous snake in the world, as Roald Dahl tells it in his terrifying story, Poison.
Listen, it's an awful good story, but to get the point, you got to understand about two things. What kind of a guy Harry Pope was, and what kind of a snake a crate is. First, the crate. You spell it K-R-A-I-T. They're in India, the crates are. Little snakes, sometimes not more than 3 or 4 inches long. You have to look real careful if you're going to see one at all. Really almost like a worm. Except that it's the most poisonous snake in the world. It can bite faster than a bumblebee, and when it does, you go off like a firecracker, swell up like a hot water bottle, and in fly the angels. Crate. Tiny little snake. Now about Harry. Harry Pope. Funny guy. He had it in for anybody who wasn't American, who didn't speak his language. He called them foreigners, and he called them that army word, gook. Didn't matter if they were French, Italian, or Japanese. Gook. Foreigner, he'd say. It's kind of buggy on the subject. Funny guy. Well, Harry and me, we got sent out to Bombay on this construction job, and that's where the trouble started. You see, except for the two of us, the crew was made up of local boys, Hindus and Muslims, 40 of them. Harry was like a cat in a room full of dogs, had his back up every minute. After a month or so, it began to wear him out. Got so his appetite wasn't right. He was smoking 3 and 4 packs a day, and he wasn't getting his sleep. I used to try to straighten him out. Used to tell him he was wrong.
No, Woody, there's no use talking
to
you.
Listen, Harry, they're all good boys. Why don't you take it easy?
Woody, you and I are good friends, but there are a lot of things you just don't understand.
You ought to take it easy, Harry. They're all human beings, just like you and me.
They're gooks, Woody. Foreigners. Look it. Think about it this way. How'd you like your sister to marry one of them?
I haven't got a sister, and anyway, you've asked me that before.
Yeah, you see? You won't even make the effort to understand.
Well, that's how it was with Harry, and you know about the crate. Now about what happened. It was June of last year. It was hot and sticky, even though the sun was down. I was putting on a clean shirt to go out.
Oh, man, I'm really beat tonight. What's with you, Woody? What's a clean shirt for?
Going out.
What do you got, a date?
No, I thought I'd stop off at Dr. Ganderby's. He promised he'd show me the photos he made down in the leper colony.
Ganderby?
Yeah. These photos are supposed to be pretty interesting stuff. Well, how about it, Harry? Would you like to come along?
Ganderby? He's a Hindu. A gook. Foreigner. I don't want to spend no evening with a gook. Shoot, not old Harry.
So I went off to the doctor's, and Harry went to bed with the detective story. I had a very interesting evening. Later, old Harry was plenty sorry that he stayed home. I didn't leave the doctor's until around midnight, and when I drove back through the sleeping city, it was very quiet and dark. I thought about the pictures of the lepers I'd seen. I remember thinking, I hope Harry's awake, because I'd like to tell him about those pictures. And when I got home, I was glad to see the light in his room was still burning.
Harry, you up?
I didn't get an answer. Probably fell asleep reading.
Harry, you awake, Harry?
Shh. Woody. Stop yelling.
Harry, boy, what's the matter, kid?
Shh. Stop, Woody. Take off your shoes.
I couldn't tell what was the matter, but I knew he was serious, whatever it was about, so I did what he wanted. He was in bed, under his netting, with a reading light on, his book on the floor. He lay quite still, and the sheet came halfway up his chest. He was wearing those corny pajamas of his with the big checks all over him. And the pajamas were soaked in the sweat that was rolling off his face. He lay like a corpse, flat on his back, with his hands lying dead on the bed. His hands, even the backs of them, were sweating. His eyes looked like he was watching somebody saw his leg off.
Woody, what's the matter, boy?
It's a crate.
Crate? Where?
For man's sake.
Where? Where's the crate?
In here.
Under the netting?
No. Under the sheet.
Where'd it bite you?
It hasn't. Yet.
Where under the sheet?
Right on my belly.
Holy son.
You can wake it up if you don't cut out that yellow.
How'd it get in there?
I don't know. Came up under the netting, I guess. Or it's been in the bed all day.
Is it a big one?
No. Crate don't have to be big. Looked about 3 or 4 inches. Come along my side. I didn't move. It went under the sheet. One of them folds. One of them wrinkles there over my belly.
How long ago did it come?
Hours. Hours and hours and days and weeks. Woody, I've been waiting a year for you to get home.
You must be sleeping in there, huh?
Yeah. I think it is.
Why, now listen, Harry. Maybe it'll wake up and go away. Go home or something, huh?
I can't wait, Woody. I've been lying here scared I'd move sudden and wake it up.
Yeah, you're scared and it'll bite.
I've been lying here scared to death I'd cough.
All right, don't you worry about a thing, Harry. I know just what to do.
Where you going, Woody? Don't leave me.
The thing was to be ready to cauterize the bite right away. I'd heard about one method. I went out to the kitchen, and I got a whole fistful of those big kitchen matches, and I took them back to the bedroom. Arranged them all with the heads together. Held them like you'd hold a torch.
What are you going to do? What are the matches for?
Now listen, Harry, here's how it goes. These will cauterize, see? So we count three, flip back the sheet, and you jump out of bed. Now you follow me?
You're out of your mind.
No, no, listen, Harry. If the crate bites you, I strike the bundle and press it against the spot, and it burns out the poison, see? Well, the matches...
Get away from me. You're a bubble-headed maniac.
No, Harry, I'm only trying to...
Shh. Listen, Woody, take your matches and your bright ideas and get the heck out of here. Call the doctor.
The doctor? I never thought of that.
Now get to it.
Okay, Harry. Who do you want? Gander By or Forsythe?
Forsythe. Things are bad enough without you. Gotta bring that gook in here.
I dug through the telephone book and I found Dr. Matson B. Forsythe's number and I dialed it. Let me speak to the doctor. It's very urgent.
Who is calling, please?
Arthur Woods.
Who?
Woods. Arthur Woods.
Spell, please.
Woods. W.
W.
O.
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 You have already said O. I have already written O. Have the kindness to give me the next letter, please.
O. It's O after O.
Please?
Look, my name is Woods.
Spell, please.
W O O D
W O O Aha
D S Woods
Woods W O O D S Mr. Woods.
That's right, that's just right. Now let me speak to the doctor, please.
Sorry, doctor not in. Call tomorrow.
Across the room, Harry lay very still, sweating, trying to keep every muscle relaxed. His face was beginning to twitch a little. I was scared. If that twitch should spread, I called the doctor's house again.
Please, I do not understand.
Look, I said if you don't tell me where the doctor is, I'm going to come over there and pull your arms off, and then I'm going to take you by the neck and...
The doctor is at the club, please.
What club?
The country club. Ring 673.
Harry lay very still, fighting the twitches, trying to keep from jumping out of his skin, while I waited for the bartender at the club to locate Dr. Forsythe. After about 5 minutes and nothing, I got this.
Are you there?
Listen, doctor, you got to get over here right away. This is Arthur Woods and my partner. He's got a snake in the bed with him. Doctor?
Would you mind repeating that, old boy?
I said snake. He's got a snake in the bed with him.
Snake? Oh, jolly, jolly. I say, who is this? Is this Captain Smiles speaking?
Please, Doctor, you got to get over here right away. It's urgent.
Spies, you can't. You don't fool me. Not for an instant, you don't.
Oh, please, Doctor.
It's making bad.
Listen, is this Dr. Forsythe speaking?
Of course not. It's Colonel Harcourt.
Oh, well, let me speak to the doctor, please.
Oh, but you can't, old fellow.
Why not?
Why, he's jolly well passed out, don't you know?
Passed out?
Like a mackerel. Snake in the...
Yeah. Listen, Harry, you got to forget all this prejudice stuff. Gander buys your only chance.
No. No, he's a gook.
He went to Oxford, Harry.
He's a gook.
It's him or the Undertaker.
He's a gook.
I'm going to call him, Harry.
All right. Go ahead, call him. But he's a gook.
I called him. When I mentioned Crate, he was quiet for a good 10 seconds, and then he said he'd be right over. And he was within 5 minutes. He was wearing felt slippers, and he moved silently into the bedroom. He was carrying his black satchel, and when I saw the lamplight glinting softly in his steel-rimmed spectacles, saw his wise, gentle eyes, his bald, brown head, I thought to myself, why, he looks just like Mahatma Gandhi. He looked silently at Harry and smiled encouragingly. Harry looked at him, looked at me, and looked away.
Now, first we must very carefully remove the netting from about the bed. Mr. Pope, I want you to pay no attention to us. You are to concentrate on being very quiet, on letting the little snake sleep. It is a very little snake, and it is very tired. You must tell yourself this, and you must believe it is necessary for it to sleep.
Yeah.
Mr. Wood, help me lift the netting very slowly.
Up.
Good.
What are you going to do for me?
Think about the little snake.
What do you think I'm thinking about? What are you going to do for me?
The snake. It is here?
It's in one of those folds over his abdomen, Doctor.
Now we all know where it is.
Pretend you are the mother of the little snake. You are keeping it warm. It is sleeping. That is good.
Just so it don't wake up and want breakfast.
You joke? That is good.
I wish I was back home in the good old USA.
Now then,
what are you going to do, Doctor?
I have a serum here. It was injected into the blood of Mr. Pope. Then, as he puts it, the little snake made breakfast to his heart's content without harm to Mama.
His hands were brown and slender and astonishingly deft. He poked the hypodermic into a capsule of thick yellowish stuff, the serum, and then with infinite care he drew the plunger slowly and steadily upward. The glistening chamber filled. He withdrew the needle, laid the hypodermic down, and then with all the gentleness in the world, he began to fold back Harry's sleeve. It was as though he were folding rare old lace. He inched the sleeve carefully, under and up Harry's arm until the vein came into view.
I'm going to fasten the tourniquet on your arm now. It will be just above the elbow. Do not move your arm. Do not twitch your muscle.
Gently he tightened the rubber tourniquet, and Harry's arm began to flush dark. The vein began to swell blue and tight. Harry kept his eyes on the ceiling.
Now I'm going to insert the needle in the vein. You must not react. By that I mean you must not tense your abdominal muscles. Believe me, Mr. Pope, this will not hurt.
Very carefully, he placed the syringe almost flat against the arm, slid the needle in sideways through the skin and into the blue vein, slid it slowly but so firmly that it went in smooth as a knife going into a cheese.
Doc.
Shh.
You're good, aren't you, Doc?
You must believe that.
You aren't gonna let me die, are you, Doc?
I'm your friend. You must believe that.
Are you, Doc? You won't let me die.
No, I will not let you die. Now, be still and think about that.
With all the care in the world, as he had pushed the needle into the vein, now he pressed the plunger down, pressed the serum through the needle and into Harry Pope's body. I watched Harry. His eyes were on the wise, gentle face of Dr. Ganderby. His eyes wanted desperately to believe what Ganderby had told him. Now the hypodermic was empty, and slowly it was withdrawn. And then slowly the deft, graceful little hands loosened the rubber tourniquet. and Ganderby looked up, met Harry's eyes and smiled. Harry tried to smile back, but the smile jumped and twitched and died.
You got taken care of me, huh, Doc?
Yes, my son. Now you must be still while the serum is pumped through your body. Be very still and be very assured. I'm your friend. The serum will save you. You will escape harm.
He beckoned to me, and I followed him out of the room and out onto the dark porch. The air was heavy and hot. Ganderby stared out at the blackness, drummed his fingers softly on the railing.
Your friend is in grave danger.
Yeah, but the serum. You gave him the serum.
I gave him the serum.
It isn't any good.
It is the finest known to medical science. And it is worthless.
To most of us, science is something strange and mysterious. We think of magic medicines and supersonic planes. But here's a scientific achievement that's as real as your car and as near as your Richfield dealer. It's xylene, one of the highest anunnaki gasoline components ever discovered by scientific research. And xylene can benefit you today, because every gallon of Richfield gasoline now contains xylene. Xylene to give your car that smooth, knockless power that eats up the miles. Xylene for that swift, eager response you need in traffic. Furthermore, there's a Richfield gasoline to fit your motor. Your Richfield dealer offers two great Richfield gasolines, both with xylene. Get Richfield High Octane at regular price for the average motor. Or Richfield Ethyl. Ethyl at its best for top results in highest compression motors. Get Richfield gasoline tomorrow. Stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. And now we return you to Escape.
So there it was. Harry Pope, the man who had been an enemy of anyone and everyone who didn't come from his country or speak his language, was now halfway through death's door, and his only hope lay in a Dr. Ganderby of another race, another creed, another country, and another color. Now, for the first time in his life, Harry had made a gesture of friendship toward a person of another race. First time, and it seemed to me the last.
No, my friend, the serum is worthless.
What can we do then? The snake is bound to wake sooner or later. Harry will move, he won't be able to help himself, and the snake will strike.
We must think.
Look, I'll shoot it. I can hold the gun low and flat so that even if I hit Harry, it won't be a penetrating wound, and I'll blow the snake sheet and all, clear the bed, huh?
But you don't even know which of the many folds and creases in that sheet is the harbor of the snake.
Yeah.
You might shoot the air.
Yeah.
You would most certainly wake the snake then.
No, we can't do that.
I think I have a solution, Mr. Woods.
Yeah?
We will anesthetize the snake. Yes. We will use nitrous oxide, or ether, or chloroform. I think the last. Chloroform, yes.
We put the snake out right while he's lying on Harry, is that the idea?
That is it, Mr. Woods. Now, if you will please drive quickly down to my house, my boy will show you where I keep my supplies. The chloroform is in a bottle with an orange label.
Orange label?
Yes. Bring it back as quickly as you can. I will stay with Mr. Pope and try to keep him assured.
He seems to like you.
We all like the doctor when we are sick.
I drove it as fast as I could. The houseboy at the doctor's thought I was a madman at first, but then he decided in my favor, showed me where the stuff was. I found the bottle with the orange label, smelled it to make sure, and then took off back to the house. I eased the car up the driveway and tiptoed into the bedroom.
You're my friend, doctor, huh? My pal?
Yes, I am your friend, and I am not going to let any harm come to you.
Is Woody. He's my friend, too, Doc.
Here's the stuff, Doctor.
Woody, I've been an awful dope all my life. You know that, Woody?
It's okay, Harry. You're going to be okay from now on.
The doc here, my friend here, I didn't like him when he first came into the room. Why? Because he wasn't an American or even an Englishman. What do you know about that, huh? He's my friend.
Oh, it's okay, Harry. You're going to be okay now, boy.
I've been a prize dope.
Mr. Woods, you'll have to help me.
Right. He pulled a prescription pad out of his case, tore the cardboard backing off, and twisted it into a neat little funnel. He laid this on the edge of the bed. And then he took the piece of hollow rubber tubing which had been used as a tourniquet, and he began to slide it into the sheet. It went in where the sheet ended, across Harry's chest, and he slid it down. He slid it slowly, so slowly that although I was watching it, I didn't see it move. Hours seemed to crawl by. The tube inched invisibly on and down, down and down, past the unseen buttons of his jacket, past the unseen cord to his trousers, and then it stopped. Ganderby had sent it by a route which did not cross any of the creases in the sheet. He was being very careful not to prod the snake with it. He was sweating, too, now, sweating and biting his lip with his teeth. Funny, I remember now, one was gold. I remember staring at it while he inched that tube.
Now the funnel. I fit it into the end of the tube and we are ready. Mr. Pope, this is going to be very cold. The evaporation of the chloroform will cause a sharp lowering of the temperature. You must be prepared for this.
Mm.
It will take rather a long time, another factor for which you must prepare yourself. The snake is a reptile, and reptiles do not react quickly to the anesthetics which are intended for the use of warm-blooded animals. Mm. Bear these things in mind. Are you ready?
Sure. Friend.
He opened the bottle and began to drip the stuff into the funnel. Slowly, very slowly, drop by drop, the clear liquid entered the tube and traveled the long, dark route to Harry Pope's stomach, where the crate lay sleeping. Drop by drop, a pale, swirling vapor hung over the funnel. Down there on the sheet, where the tube ended, a wet gray patch began to spread, the chloroform spreading and evaporating, spreading and evaporating. The room began to reek of it. And I remembered other places and other times, hospitals, operations, the death of loved ones, smell of chloroform.
Mm.
Harry began to twitch now, his nose. He seemed to be in agony.
Woody.
Harry, what is it?
I think I'm gonna sneeze.
Don't do it, boy. Hang on, Harry. You gotta hang on. Don't. Ganderby looked at Harry's face. He reached up, pressed his knuckle against some nerve on Harry's upper lip, and the agonized look vanished. The relentless dripping of the chloroform continued. Harry was getting cold. I could see goose flesh along his arms, across the top of his chest where the jacket was open. Ganderby looked at this and stopped pouring.
That is enough. I think our little friend should be thoroughly unconscious now. Mr. Pope, you must remain very still. We are going to remove the sheet now.
Anything you say, Doctor.
Mr. Woods, you take the other side. We will have to do this ever so carefully.
We each took a side of the hem. I watched Ganderby and did everything that he did. Harry's arms were still flat on the bed, pointing toward his feet. We inched the sheet under and free of these. It was rough, because we had to do it without disturbing the main area of the sheet. When it was free of his arms, we began to raise it slowly, gathering the material in our hands as we progressed ever so slowly down Harry's chest. We reached the end of his jacket. No sign of the snake. My hands were beginning to shake. Ganderby paused while I turned my head away for air. The odor of chloroform was stifling. And then we went on, slowly, thread by thread, raising the sheet and easing it away, down past the cord of his pajamas, down and down, and still no sign of the snake. I'd stopped looking for it by now. I was concentrating on keeping my arms from shaking. And then, quite suddenly, we were done. Ganderby dropped the sheet on the floor. Harry lay on his back, not moving, but watching us with wide, terrorized eyes. Ganderby squinted at both sides of Harry, at his legs.
Where is it?
It is not, as you suppose, on the outside of your pajama pants. It must be up one of the legs.
Harry, no!
Stop it!
I don't see it.
Kick those tatters of cloth, the remains of his pants.
Yeah. No, nothing.
The bed. Under the bed.
Yeah. Look at me, Harry. Harry, move your feet. No, there's nothing.
Mr. Pope, are you quite certain you saw a snake? Sometimes when we are very tired, we find our autosuggestive faculties run a bit out of hand.
Are you calling me a liar?
Why, no. I merely say that the autosuggestive
faculties... Are you telling me I'm a liar?
Harry.
Why, you lousy little quack. Call me a liar. You stinking little Hindu witch doctor with your fancy pants talk.
Harry!
Come in here sticking me full of your cheap, no-good medicine.
Harry, don't!
Pour that freezing cold up all over
Harry, me. Take it easy. Harry's your friend.
My friend! That little hunk of foreign trash, my friend.
Why, where I come from, where you guys live, can't you like him for bus boys?
You make a mistake. You are wrong.
Yeah, for bus boys, for waiters, for nothing. You're a foreigner. You're a gook. You're a nothing. Why, I ought to beat you to a bloody pulp. You and your chloroform. You and your stuff about friendship and mama snake. And I must make out like I like you. I'll to split your head wide open, you gook. You gook, you gook, you gook.
Please, doctor, forgive him. He's been under a great strain. He doesn't mean it.
A great strain, yes. He needs a good holiday. Good night, Mr. Woods.
That's all. I couldn't tell this if old Harry was still alive. Poor old Harry. He didn't die in India. He died in Chicago, in the Loop. Got run over by a taxi cab. The driver was third-generation Irish, a real 100% white American. Maybe that means something, I don't know. Poor old Harry.
Believe it or not, but the very life of your car depends on oil. Without oil, your motor would grind itself to pieces in a matter of minutes. That's why you need an oil that stands up under every driving condition. That's why you need Rich Lube all-weather motor oil. Rich Lube is refined 100% from the finest Pennsylvania crude oil ever discovered. That's your guarantee that Rich Lube won't burn up even under the terrific heat of hard summer driving. Its tough, long-lasting oil film is your faithful watchdog. It protects your motor every mile you drive. You can depend on it. Moreover, Rich Lube motor oil combats carbon and other harmful deposits by its special cleansing action. It cleans as it lubricates your motor. Keep your motor young. Keep your motor clean. See your Richfield gasoline dealer tomorrow. Ask him to change your oil to Rich Lube all-weather motor oil. Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight is presented Poison by Roald Dahl and adapted for radio by James Poe. Featured in tonight's cast were Jack Webb as Woody, Bill Conrad as Harry, Jay Novello as Ganderby, and Charlie Long as the Houseboy. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
You are lost in the headhunter territory of New Guinea, fighting your way through the swamps in search of gold. With you is a giant brute of a man and his beautiful wife, who doesn't care which of you is killed or who kills him, and from whose evil treachery there is no escape.
Next week at this time, the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York invites you to escape with an exciting story of evil and violence in the deadly swamps of New Guinea, as Jules Archer tells it in Two Came Back. Goodbye then until the same time next week when once again we offer you Escape. Tom Hanlon speaking over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Escape and their adaptation of the story, Poison, from July 28th, 1950. That does it for this hour of the program. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again when you can for another hour of sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.